Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. We have another great show for you this morning. If you are a loyal listener to Community Voices, you are aware that I'm a huge fan of the spoken word. I've done a bevy of shows featuring spoken word artists and authors, but what is distinctive about this morning's guest is the rich diversity of her work, commitment to community, and spiritual grounding. This morning, I have the pleasure of talking with an extraordinary writer and author. Get ready for another great show here on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Community Voices with Ron Holland. In-depth analysis, thought-provoking, and hard-hitting. Community Voices with Ron Holland. Giving you an opportunity to share what's on your mind and in your heart. Community Voices with Ron Holland on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Joining me this morning is Mrs. Kim Gordon Moore, author of two great books, Diversities of Gifts, Same Spirit, and her latest work, Wings of the Wind, A Cornucopia of Poetry. Kim Gordon Moore is an award-winning recipient in poetry contests such as the Edward Davin Vickers Memorial Award and One Swan Productions Writing Competition. Her poems appeared in Writer's Digest magazine, and she was selected as one of the contributing authors for Chicken Soup for the Soul. I would certainly exhaust the entire show going through her biography. Kim, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Ron. I appreciate you having me here this morning.
Absolutely. If folks would only know, if they knew that we were having a conversation prior to going on the air.
Oh, gosh.
Absolutely. We had just a wonderful conversation.
Yes.
But we do have to do the interview.
I know. It's hard. Somebody has to do it, right?
Absolutely. Before we start talking about your book, I do want to ask you about some of the work that you're doing in the community. You've been recognized by various entities for your work, some charitable work, some mentoring partnerships. Talk a little bit about the inspiration behind your active involvement in various areas of community.
Sure, not a problem. You know, growing up, I think that when we were doing things in our community growing up, that was just something that you did things for other people. Mm-hmm. You took the focus off of yourself. And so in our community, in our hood, so to speak, we had to make sure that we looked out for each other. And I think that when we talk about it takes a village to raise a child, then that's pretty much what we got in terms of our roots as I was growing up. So this was something that was not unusual for me. This is second nature to me, because you automatically, if you see people who are in need, and if there's something that you can do in order to help them, you do.
Absolutely.
I've gone into collaboration with many people just to see if there was something that I can do or contribute in order to make a situation or to at least be a helpmate to certain people, regardless of whether it was financially, whether it was through donating books. So whatever it is that I have a resource that I can help those sources out in the community, then that's what I do.
And that is a passion of yours?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's not something that, it's more driven. Sometimes you have people who talk about it and you don't want to just sit and not do anything. I prefer, instead of being a spectator, I like to be a participator in things. I don't want to just sit and just talk about a problem. I want to try to be a part of the solution. And so if there is something that I can do in order to help with that, then I try to do that as much as possible.
Right. Now, prior to going on the air, we did talk about Dove's Nest. And so working with the women of the Dove Nest program, do you get the sense that the inspiration and hope that you're providing will pay off for the women of that and similar programs?
Absolutely. I think that anything that you can do in order to help someone, especially in your line of expertise, it would be. Now, I'm not necessarily saying I'm an expert in things, but I do have certain, I guess you would say, experiences with different situations. And it primarily started with the Dove's Nest was from an experience that I had in college. My major was criminal justice with my undergraduate degree. And in my last year, we had to do something that was going to be in the community. And so I had a friend of mine who actually told me about a woman's shelter. And we went there. Often you don't see or hear some of the horrible things that women are going through. But at that particular time, we went and we saw, I came across a lady, I think it was, and there were so many different women who were there, but the lady who I actually had contact with, she had two children and she was in this shelter. And apparently she was in a very abusive marriage and she would do so many things to try to shield her children from being abused. And the last straw was when her husband came home. He was very intoxicated and she was trying to protect her children. And in doing that, he actually picked her up, and I think she was living in a mobile home, as we called it back during that time. He picked her up. He threw her through a closed door because she tried to close the door so that he would not get to doing any harm or do anything to the children. Mm-hmm. And what inadvertently happened was the entire door came down, hinges and all, wow, as he just threw her with such thrust through it. So she was trying to, she knew that she had to leave. Yeah. And she had to find some kind of way to get out. And when women particularly are having issues, more than likely, I think old school people used to say, oh, you stay in there, you pray about it, and then you move on. And they're not into that particular situation. So you're sitting here and you're getting your brain's beaten out, and you're trying to still put on a good show when you get out in public because of that fear. Yeah. And you have nowhere to go. And people are just saying, pray about it and stay in it. When oftentimes, if God is showing you a way that you need to get out, here is how you can get help, and the other person's going to need it as well, then this is what we need to try to see if we can give those resources to people who are going through and suffering.
Why do women stay?
I think it's just been something that's been ingrained. It's something that through the years, it's been a thought process that women said that regardless, they would know that there would be infidelity on the part of maybe their husbands. They would know that there are a whole lot of other children who are out there. They would just know that there are just different things that they are doing, and they feel that I have to stay through with them through thick and thin. And I know in many scenarios where I know personally of women having to deal with this is that they don't want their children to go through a broken home. So sometimes it's really a little more difficult for them to stay in an abusive situation, right, and as opposed to probably leaving, even for the sake of their children.
Now, what do you see as major challenges for women in our country?
I think probably the challenges with us is just to kind of take the helm. I think the challenges that we have right now are women are the heads of households. Women are having to really take on the responsibility where men are a little absent. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that probably you may not have the children who become the victims in this situation, who are given the attention that they need, and sometimes they're on their own.
Yeah.
They have to wear so many hats, and so therefore there is not an avenue where they can go and actually just vent or to fellowship or to seek that help. You know, with working with the Dove's Nest, which is a subsidiary of the Charlotte Rescue Mission, the men, it started out with them. And so there was always an avenue for men to go to, but with women, you had to endure. You had to just suck it up and you just had to just deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so when the Dove's Nest came aboard, just like some of the other organizations that are around town that deal with the women's shelters and so forth, they are looking at that need that needs to be fulfilled. And so now you have it where women are trying to get out and discuss it more. I think what really in terms happens is that, and especially I think even when I look at my situation, it's just that I don't like to necessarily put my business out in the street, so
right,
to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And so therefore we become mum and we suffer in silence. And I think that with facilities such as the Dove's Nest, that is giving women the opportunity to be able to vent and to be able to heal from the services that they do render.
Now, I am a student of politics, and so I love to talk about politics. And so when you have an extraordinary woman in the studio like yourself.
Oh, you are much too kind.
I get an opportunity to ask about the political machinations that are happening in our country. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about where we are and how do women navigate the discussion around abortion and contraception and all those things that politicians use in terms of an election year.
Oh, wow. Yes. I think that when you look at most politicians, they are going to try to get to that woman vote.
Yeah.
Particularly because there's so many issues that we're dealing with right now that's coming out in the open. When you look back in the 70s, when you start looking at when women were going through the liberation period, that was where they were saying that they were rebellious, you know, that they need to sit down, they need to stop trying to cause problems.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But what's happening, the voice of women is so distinctive and is so powerful now that you have to listen. There are so many views, whether you agree with it or not, that is very evident evident in terms of the living conditions, what they're doing in order to provide child care, whether they do have a choice, and regardless of where you are politically or even religiously, and thinking that way, these are some very real issues that we're dealing with right now, and particularly in this country. The one beautiful part about it is that we're not like a lot of other nations where women's voices are silenced, right, where they cannot speak out, where they cannot say certain things. And so the power of the vote, actually, and particularly even with this past election and the elections before, I think you're seeing where women now are becoming a little more prominent. They are voicing their opinions. They are getting out and actually being very courageous.
And it's wonderful.
I think it really is. Yeah. And I think that you need that type of conversation. You know, for so long, we've always had, for the most part, like the good old boys club where, you know, they have a stringent set of rules and regulations that they want to abide by. And if you try to cross over that line and do anything different, then you could probably be causing problems, so to speak, you know. But right now, I think that this is a very good time for women because you are seeing a difference and a change, even with sororities, where there are other women's organizations that are supporting some very real issues that women are dealing with right now. Even with talking about their health, you're finding that that's a little more open than it was previously, probably during my mother's time. Mm-hmm. You know, certain things you just did not talk about. And right now, there are some very real conversations that's coming up that what we're dealing with girls and with them growing up and developing and as they become women, what you have to deal with now. It's just almost like a journey that you're going through with your life. And it's going to be some challenges, but there are going to be some victories. And I think that our position right now politically is basically victorious. They're listening. I think that the male politicians are definitely listening with the chief justices and all that we have now, you know.
So reduce the testosterone and increase the estrogen.
Let's all get along. Let's just all get along.
Now, you're the co-founder of Favorite Things for a Cause, creating awareness by understanding setbacks through edification. What specifically is Favorite Things for a Cause, and what are the benefits of the program?
Well, actually, with Favorite Things for a Cause, it's a not-for-profit. It's not a non-profit organization. Mm-hmm. So this was something that was a tool that we use in order to reach out to different organizations. And the Dove's Nest actually was the first. And so when it was established with that, it came primarily from a little tweaking from Oprah Winfrey's show, her Favorite Things show. Mm-hmm. She was always giving away free things to her audience members. And I said, what if we did something that was Favorite Things, but it was for a cause? And we would do different things that was a Favorite Things thing for us. Mm-hmm. And so with the Dove's Nest, what we primarily did, and I was working in the publishing and beauty industry at the time, and so I had access to getting a lot of little gifts that people were kind of like just discarding or what have you. And when I found out about the Dove's Nest, that was like an open door to take some of those things during Christmas time, because it was very close to that time, and just taking some of those things and giving them to the women, and then through not just giving them a gift, not just saying that here's a handout for Christmas and we're doing something nice for you, but it was a purpose behind it, and it was to pay it forward as we're doing with them, as we're talking with them, as we're sharing with them, then this is how we pay it forward. Mm-hmm. And it was so interesting with that particular time when we gave away the gifts for the Dove's Nest. I had a young lady who I was working with, and everyone was talking about what type of voice she had, and they said, have you heard Deborah sing? And I said, no, I haven't heard Deborah sing. And they were just applauding her. Oh, she sings on the floor, and she's just kind of like, you know, just this magnificent voice, and she needs to just go and get a record deal or something like that. And so anyway, I was just moved, and I prayed about it, and I said, Lord, I said, I want to make sure I'm doing things right. I want to make sure I'm doing it in order. I don't want to do something just to say I have my name out there to do something. I want to make sure that it's with a purpose. And so I asked her, and it was just like it fell in my spirit that I asked her, I would like for you to sing for these ladies, just give them a song. And the song that she selected, her name is Deborah Bryant, and the song that she selected had everyone in tears. It was not planned like that. It just happened. And when she did, there was so much emotion that was coming out and pouring out until it just changed almost the whole structure. We just let it happen because it was just that's how we had to deal with and connect in that moment. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, when with starting with that was like that major kickoff point for us. And I said, I like this. So we would do things that were favorite things of ours, such as giving away books, you know, speaking to kids and helping them in terms of reading more and just being structured with that, kids as well as adults, that there are some changes that we have to make. And if there is something that we can do and we just use something that's favorite thing that we enjoy doing, then we try to share that with them.
Right, right. Now let's talk about your books.
Okay.
Diversities of Gifts is your first, and Wings of the Wind, A Cornucopia of Poetry. Mm-hmm. Now, Wings of the Wind, A Cornucopia of Poetry is your latest book. Talk about the impetus for the book.
You know, I know that everyone has like a certain type of regimen that they go through every single morning.
And see, I was going to ask you about that. That was a setup for the next question.
It was a setup. Oh my gosh. See, I'm kind of like there with you, Ron.
Go ahead.
But you know, but every single morning I have to have a ritual, I guess you would say, that I go through.
Yeah.
I know that I have no idea how the day is going to go, so I have to get it started with on my knees. Uh-huh. And so after the coffee, then we go to the disciplines and go through with meditation and just trying to make sure that we are in a calming spirit before we get started.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started writing, I did not want to write just for the sake of just putting some words down and just say, oh, I'm a writer or I'm an author right now, and just say, oh, we good to go. That wasn't the purpose. My whole idea was to take what it was that God has blessed me with,
mm-hmm.
which was the power of writing, and to hopefully be able to take it and elevate it to a different level. And so when I usually read, every time I have a scripture and then I go to my discipline in order to read my lesson for the day, there's always something that pops out. And every year it would be a word, it seems like, that God would impress in me to do for the next year. So it would be words like soar. It would be words like move forward. It would just be certain little phrases, nothing necessarily major, and I would write it down. And so when this latest book, which is Wings of the Wind, actually came from several scriptures that I read, and it just popped out with Wings of the Wind, and I kept saying, I got sore, I got moving forward, I have elevation, it is something going, let me just write this down and put it here and let it just simmer like in my cook pot for a little bit,
right.
And then I'll definitely get whatever it is that's going to come after that. So that's how that started with Wings of the Wind,
mm-hmm.
And then that's how it culminated into a book of poetry. And the cornucopia is, when you think of the horn of plenty during Thanksgiving, then it's just a plentiful you know, introduction and offering of a variety of poems there.
Mm-hmm. Now, in all of your work, is there one specific word that best describes your message? What would that one word be for you?
I think action would probably be it.
Action?
Action. With a stress, you know, we make sure there's an emphasis on action. You know, so often we sit down sometimes and we see where there are issues, there are problems, we talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, and we never really actually just get and respond to it or do something in order to make that change.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what happens with the inspiration that I get. I have to sit quiet sometimes, and early in my early morning hours, that's the time when I know the phone isn't ringing, I don't have to worry about somebody texting me, I don't have to worry about anything going on.
That is your space.
That is my space, that is my time, and I am going to have it. Nobody's going to take that from me.
Yeah.
But I just sit in the quiet sometimes, and sometimes I'll get my cup of coffee or a cup of tea and just sit outside and before I get ready to go to work and just listen. And if I don't hear anything, that's my time when I know that God is going to be speaking to me and speaking to my heart and telling me, okay, well, this is what you need to prepare for today. And this is where you need to be. So in the event that whatever happens, you're going to be able to know how to deal with.
Now, is this indicative of all creative people that, you know, they have to have their own space in order to actually have that, those juices flowing?
I think so. Yeah. I really do. I talk to several people who are either authors, if they're songwriters, if they're artists where they paint, and I notice that they have to get quiet, or either they'll have certain types of music that will help to get them into that mood of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that you do need to get away from the distractions and the background noise in order to think and in order to really just feel and get emotionally involved with whatever it is that you're doing with your craft.
Now, I do want you to read an excerpt from your book, if you don't mind.
Okay, not a problem. I think that we talked about this before, and since I am on the radio, we were talking earlier about how old school music really invokes something in us.
Absolutely.
You know, we connect so well with it. And so this is pretty much a free verse, and I'm going to try not to be too long, even though it's a little more lengthier, but I started thinking about it.
Yeah, we only have about, interestingly, 10 minutes. So if you
can. Okay, we'll try to do this really quickly.
Okay.
Oh, the sweet sounds of music, whether it's classical, jazz, or rap. Rhythm and blues, rock and roll, country, alternative, or neo-soul. The essence of old-school music, messages that were thought-provoking, soul-stirring and entertaining, timeless lyrics still resonating today. Old-school music continues to be sampled, re-recorded by singers of this new age. The foundation of most old-school music was grassroots planted and church choir trained, not vulgar or obscene, but sexy and sensual, not too excessive, retaliatory, or rebellious, but smooth and united with a funky style. There were groups who brought the music and played with live bands, crossing over to audiences of various cultures with amazing showmanship, costumes, and life-changing lyrics. With all of the finger-snapping, body-thumping, hip-shaking, and toe-tapping, the music echoed with reminders of the time, disconnecting people from war, discord, injustice, and poverty. To connections of love, peace, understanding, and unity, old school music became our great escape, with messages still ringing with purpose this day. From barbershops to beauty salons, from a Cadillac to a Chevrolet, crooners of old school music command the attention of new school style. Thank you, Dick Clark, Ed Sullivan, and Dawn Cornelius. Thank you, Motown, Arista, Columbia, Epic, and Atlantic. If you didn't introduce them, we never would have known the ambassadors behind the school of old school music.
Well, that was really wonderful. And, you know, as a student of old school music, that's relevant and important. It's close to my heart. And if you want the full version of the poem, you have to pick up the book. But I do want to ask you about this. And I know this is something that that is extremely important to you. That I think is close to your heart, and I want to get your perspective, and that is illiteracy. 14% of adults in the United States can't read, and that translates to 32 million Americans who simply can't read. 21% of adults in the United States read below the fifth grade level. 63% of prisoners in the United States can't read. 19% of high school graduates can't read. 19%. That's startling, given the fact that they have just graduated in high school.
Right.
774 million people around the world cannot read. 66% of the world's females are illiterate. These are absolutely atrocious statistics. Why is this close to your heart?
You know, you would think years ago when people were, when they were, I guess, restricted or forbidden to read, that they found a way to do it. We have so many resources right now with the internet, with libraries, with book swaps, you name it, that there is so much information and freedom in order to read that we're not doing it. It startles me and it disturbs me tremendously that we have such, the statistics that you read just now are just absolutely mind-boggling, because in this day and time, in 2013, we should not be here. We should not have dropped in the United States down to the 12th country around the world, globally now, where we have dropped in terms of our ability to read and produce and also to get education. Something is terribly wrong with this when we have so many magnet schools and so many other public schools and private schools and things that's helping us with this particular situation. So I'm looking at the functionally illiterate people. They're functionally illiterate. They can probably maybe read specific things, like maybe just specific words, but if you tried to get them contractually to maybe understand what it is that they're reading, they don't. And I'm finding that so many things are so disproportionate with this. We should not be having this educational problem right now, you know, and I'm finding that so many kids are coming out unprepared. You should not have college graduates who do not know how to write or do not know how to function with a college degree or even a high school degree. It should not even be that way. I had last year, I was talking to the Literacy Council, and it was in Union County, and when I was talking to her, we were talking about a book, a giveaway, and she was telling me that, oh, that book that you have is on an eighth grade level, even though it was written by an adult. But she said that our people who we service are on a fifth grade level. And I said, okay. I said, well, this will help to encourage them then in order to just try to read a little bit more and get up to that level. Now, these are grown people we're talking about. And so she said that, no, we don't want to do that. We want to just go ahead and just make sure that they are comfortable, I guess you would say, where they are. And so I think that we've gotten a little complacent. We've gotten complacent with, I think, the old way that we used to do things. It was required that reading, writing, and arithmetic was a part of our repertoire, regardless of where we were in school. That was like your basics that you always took.
Right.
But this day and time, we should never, ever be to a point where we're saying people do not know how to respond or right. You know, in this day and time, it should not even be a conversation we're having right now. So I am trying to just utilize with the book giveaways that we have. And last week I did the 2013. I was one of the volunteers, the book givers for World Book Night. World Book Night started in the UK and overseas, and it just came to the United States last year in 2012. And so they were giving books away to people who probably will not necessarily read as avidly as we probably would. Mm-hmm. And so that was just an opportunity to speak on it and to talk about it and to try to encourage people to do a little more reading. Before I started writing, I was listening to Maya Angelou one day speak, and she has such like profound words sometimes. And she was saying that in order to be a good writer, you have to be a copious reader. Of course, I had to go pull out my dictionary to find out what copious was. But anyway, I said, okay, Maya Angelou, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure how to spell it, but I will look it up. And so anyway, but what I found was that you can't write if you can't read.
Absolutely.
You know what? You can't, if you can't comprehend what it is that you're writing, then it's going to be nothing but a little tinkling words.
That's right.
That you're writing
That's
down
right.
if there's
right.
no comprehension.
Absolutely.
So something is terribly wrong, and the statistics that you've given, I have to applaud your research on that, because I'm telling you, it is absolutely it's so disturbing, and it should not even be a conversation we're having today.
Now, as a country, how should we address, and I should let the audience know that this is just part one. We are having such a great conversation this morning. We're going to make sure that this is a two-part program.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. I'm just having a wonderful time here.
Well, I am too.
Absolutely. Now, so how should our country grapple with this issue? I mean, what should we be doing? What are the steps that the school districts in our community, what should they be doing?
You know, I think, not necessarily having children in school myself, like right now, but I'm looking at there is an overpopulous. There are crowded, some of the school, the classrooms are crowded, overcrowded.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily blame entirely the whole thing on the school system as much as I do with the parents' involvement with their children.
Yeah.
And growing up, if we did not, we were required that once we got home, there was no playing. We loved to get outdoors. We loved to play. We didn't have internet then.
Absolutely. You know, or the iPad. Or
right. There wasn't any, there were no distractions. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
even if you wanted to look at television at Bugs Bunny, there was no looking at that until you did your schoolwork.
Right, right.
And so we had, that was a requirement. And there were teachers back then, I'm not saying that there are teachers now who don't care about children, but there were teachers who knew your name.
Mm-hmm.
And they would call you out, and they would call your parents if you were not up to par with doing your schoolwork. So I think that we have so much now where parents are multitasking and doing so much and away from the home.
Mm-hmm.
And you have what we call like the latchkey kids, where they're coming and then sometimes they may not necessarily be doing all their work, and they're distracted by either the cell phone or either the computer or either something on television or the Xbox or what have you, that they are distracted by these things. So what we're looking at that we're losing ground on is hurting this country tremendously.
Yeah.
So we have the opportunities that are out there. We have the educational institutions. Like I said, we have the libraries. You have, even if you have internet access, there's nobody who probably doesn't have internet access right now, that there is a wealth of information to learn about, and there should not be any reason why we should be having these alarming statistics like we have with illiteracy. And it's very disturbing, because I'm finding that there are so many people, adults as well as young kids or young people, who are basically just kind of, you know, just drifting through life and thinking that that's not important, and all they need to do is just know how to use the keyboard, and that's what's going to help them to arrive.
Absolutely. Well, I certainly thank you for part one of this show. I had a wonderful time.
I had a wonderful time,
but
too,
we have to do part two.
Well, that's
absolutely.
Wonderful.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices on Praise 100.9 and 92.7, Charlotte's Inspiration Station.
Praise 100.9 and 92.7 Charlotte's Inspiration Station. I'd like to again thank writer and author Kim Gordon Moore for coming on today's show. Tune in to next week's show for part two of the interview. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. Today's show is also available on our Praise Charlotte website. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.